Support for Aspen Public Radio comes from Balcom & Green PC, a full-service law firm with offices in Glenwood Springs, Aspen, and Basalt, providing advice and solutions for their clients' legal needs throughout Western Colorado for more than 60 years. Learn more at balcomgreen.com.
Welcome to Valley Roundup. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. Politics are still in play in Basalt after two elections and the resignation of the town manager.
It's been, mid-August till mid-November, and they haven't been able to come up with a negotiated settlement, so you would think that the next step is litigation.
And if several development proposals in the Mid-Valley get approved, there could be up to 1,000 new housing units along the Highway 82 corridor. Meanwhile, the city of Aspen is igniting its own plans for affordable housing as well. The Pitkin County Jail is serving as home to two convicted drunk drivers. One received 400 days for his crime, which led to a victim being seriously hurt. The other got 90 days in jail for her fifth DUI.
I think the 400-day sentence was more about just kind of the insult to the process and getting caught in this lie.
And environmentalists are praising the federal government's decision to cancel 25 leases in the Thompson Divide near Carbondale.
This is another one of those battles that never ends. You know, they say rust never sleeps and money never sleeps.
Another headline this week is the lack of snow. It's making skiers and riders antsy that the 2016-17 season is getting off to a slow start. Finally, we acknowledge the departure of the general manager of Community Access Radio, KDNK, in Carbondale. Joining me this week are Scott Condon, reporter for the Aspen Times, Andy Stone, columnist and former editor of the Aspen Times, and Curtis Wackley, editor of the Aspen Daily News. Thanks for coming in, and Scott joining me from Basalt, Elgibel.
Thanks for having me.
Good to be here.
Scott, you've been covering in detail the drama that is unfolding at the Basalt Town Hall, and this has to do with the town manager and the perhaps he has a conflict of interest in representing a Mid-Valley developer. Can you give us a little update?
Just to bring people up to date, so Mike Scanlon quit as the Basalt Town Manager in mid-August, and he and the town council are still trying to negotiate a severance deal, and nothing's been forthcoming. And Mike reappeared in the Valley this last week, I guess. He was introduced as part of the development team for a project called the Tree Farm, which is proposed outside of Basalt, so Basalt's not reviewing it. But Basalt's had a keen interest in this project in the past because it's within its urban growth boundary or an area within, you know, the town's sphere of influence. So there's no direct conflict as in Mike is representing a project that would be going before the town council. However, there is a gray area, and the town council held an executive session. They discussed it with their town attorney, Tom Smith, and a consulting attorney from Denver, Steve Dawes. And they came out of that 20-minute executive session and just had kind of an ambiguous statement that said, essentially, we reserve the right to say that him representing this Mid-Valley developer is a conflict with our code of ethics and therefore violates the employment agreement that he had when he was with the town. The grounds for that, and again, they're not saying it definitively, but they're saying they're looking into it. The grounds for that may be because Mike had played an active role in lobbying the Eagle County Commissioners not to approve the project, the Eagle County Planning Commission for this neck of the woods. He was lobbying them last year not to approve that project unless some major revisions were made. And now he's working with the team. And Mike said last week that he feels like that team has now incorporated some of those revisions that he was lobbying for last year.
But Scott, just a quick question from your story. I thought it said at the end that code of ethics had no real legal force whatsoever. That it wasn't binding on anybody, that it was just sort of guidelines. So are they looking at finding some way to make this part of their negotiations for his severance package?
That seems to be the case to me. Because as it says, it's a guideline, and I don't know how you could, what could you do to enforce it with someone that's no longer in your employment, you know? So I'm thinking that it's probably something that they are looking into as possible leverage in these negotiations that are ongoing.
Isn't there also a potential for litigation between Mike Scanlon and the town?
Sure seems like it. I mean, if they can't, it's been, mid-August till mid-November, and they haven't been able to come up with a negotiated settlement, so you would think that the next step is litigation.
So how is this not different from the clear conflict of interest that he had with one of his family members, or family through marriage, as it related to Mariner Real Estate, which is the developer for Willits?
Mike did not participate in any discussions that the town... He stepped back from any negotiations, and he did not participate in presenting any material to the council on any issues that involved Mariner.
So that to me, it seems like it kind of sets a precedent. Like, well, if he stepped away from that, then wouldn't it stand to reason that you ought to,
right?
You shouldn't be connected to that developer either, the tree farm.
But now he's left the town, so that becomes a different situation. I think
it's kind of like the president-elect and his business interests, right?
We won't get into that, but once again, I mean, it sort of feels like Basalt is. Continuing to be a bit of a snake pit down there. If I can quote myself, I wrote a column a number of months ago where I was comparing Basalt to somebody who wins the lottery and 2 years later is broken in jail. And the town, ever since they got that plot of land where they moved the trailer park, the town just seems to have fallen apart and then fallen into extremely nasty recriminations that spilled over into the election, and feels as if it's continuing with this whole Scanlon business.
Well, plus there's some financial issues that the town is facing now as well, right, Scott?
There is, again, it's a matter of perspective and whose perspective you are listening to. But the town council was uncomfortable with some of the spending directions that they had taken, and they'll admit that they approved some of these directions when Mike was the manager. And they say that they got, in the words of the mayor, too spendy. And so now they have a balanced budget where they are not cutting into their reserves and, in fact, are restoring reserves to 4 months of their typical operating needs. So they've reined their budget in. They are taking care of some of the obligations that have been made in the past. But they've made cuts across the board to every department to try to get to this balanced budget and restoring the reserves.
Related to this discussion with Mike Scanlon, you mentioned the tree farm proposal, which is one of many housing developments that are being proposed in the Mid-Valley. And maybe you could give the listeners a rundown real quick. You did a good comprehensive story in Tuesday's paper.
Yeah, I think that's right. Yeah, so there's two projects that are underway, and both of those projects are all affordable housing. You've got the Crawford family, the longtime family that's owned property in the Elgibel area, and Floyd Crawford, the late Floyd Crawford, developed the Elgibel Mobile Home Park, and as I understand it, it was originally he had a few trailers for workers up at Rudai. And then that kind of evolved into just worker housing in general. And that's grown to 298 residences over the years. And they are adding 46 units to that. Six will be deed-restricted affordable housing and rented out under Eagle County affordable housing guidelines. And then the commendable thing is the Crawfords, the other 40 units, are going to be rented at 30% of the area median income. So even though those other 40 units are free market, they're going to be rented at extremely affordable rates. And so they already have a waiting list of 200 families and couples that want to get into these, and they are doing the interviews to figure out who gets them. So I think by sometime in 2017, they plan on having all of those units installed. They're modular homes, attractive-looking places. They're going to be installed and people living in them by sometime in 2017. Another project that is well on its way is the affordable housing at Willits Town Center. Instead of doing a little dribble and drabble here and there, they took care of their housing obligation in one fell swoop, and so they've got 50 apartments that'll be rented out according to affordable housing guidelines, and there are 27 for-sale condos, and the Roaring Fork School District has signed up for the lion's share of those condos.
So
that's going to be in a mixed-use building where there's also retail and restaurant, and that's going to be the building where Mezzaluna opens up a second restaurant in addition to their one in Aspen, and then there's going to be a brew pub in that building as well. So I think that's going to be a pretty interesting addition to Willits Town Center.
It feels like just an incredible era of growth, really, for Basalt, and I feel like the Mid-Valley area is absorbing so much of the growth pressure from the rest of the valley, I mean, from Aspen in particular. I mean, every time, you know, a ski bum turns 35 and decides they want to start a family, then they're probably not buying a house in Aspen.
Right.
And if I recall, Scott, looking at your story, roughly it looked like the total of all those projects you outlined was something around 800 new units in the Mid-Valley, either under construction or under application. That's a significant bump.
Right. I mean, I guess the important thing to remember is, in addition to the two that we talked about, there's another one called Roaring Fork Apartments. That's by a company that builds affordable housing out of Indianapolis, and they're called Real America. And they're going to break ground on I believe it's a 56-unit apartment building, and those will also be rented for substantially less than area median income. And that is right by Stubby's Bar, if you know where that's at, by the Valero gas station there at the main Basalt entrance off Highway 82.
And the new kayak park.
Right.
Yeah, so that's a project that also, that's approved, and they're going to be breaking ground. But the other ones are in the review pipeline, so we don't know yet what's going to happen with the tree farm, which is in Elgeville, the unincorporated area of Eagle County. The Fields is a combination of affordable housing and free market housing. That is at the intersection of Valley Road and Highway 82 across from Blue Lake. And then there's a couple projects up by the Basalt High School, and one of those projects has received the first round of approval.
But I mean, the big question is there demand for this stuff?
Well, I think there absolutely is.
Well, they said they had 200 people lined up for that.
For the affordable units.
Affordable, yeah.
Well, I guess the market will dictate, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if you put 1,000 units on the market in the inventory over the next 5-7 years, you know, maybe those will become mid-priced, whatever mid-priced is. So maybe it's, you know, $500,000 or $600,000 for a little house.
The interesting thing is, I mean, none of these projects are, you know, proposing large lot, big home development.
Yeah, it's high density.
I think it's an interesting question about how that affects, let's say, Highway 82 and the our favorite traffic jam coming into Aspen. I mean, in your story, again, it mentioned that a lot of the people who were applying for, I guess it was the Crawford project, a lot of people who are applying for those units are people who already work in Aspen, just are living in Silt or Parachute and want to get a lot closer. So that doesn't actually increase the traffic coming into town. That's those are the same cars, they're just not driving as far.
You are listening to Valley Roundup, an analysis and commentary of the week's news with writers and editors. That was Andy Stone, columnist for the Aspen Times. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. We now continue our conversation.
And I think it's interesting, again, if we jump back to some of what you were discussing with Scanlon and the tree farm project. Whole part of that, of course, is there was that aspect, it strikes me, of governments or operations squabbling over tax revenues down there. Basalt wanted the size of the commercial development on the tree farm to be limited so the tree farm couldn't steal City Market
tax
away
revenue,
from Basalt,
right?
Because they wanted the tax revenue, which seems a somewhat curious thing, whereas you have governments interfering in projects in order to save their tax monies.
I mean, the jurisdictional lines are just insane down there. Right? You have two counties, you have a town, you have unincorporated. It just seems like that's one of the biggest issues, is that you have too many different authorities, really.
Scott, wasn't there somebody in the Soper's Village neighborhood who was kind of crusading about trying to change the jurisdictional lines because they didn't feel like they were getting any representation, like from the county side of it? And it, you know, Soper's Village, so it's kind of no man's land, that City Market, Orchard Plaza area.
Yeah, you know, generally I think a lot of people in Blue Lake and Summit Vista and Soper's Village have been okay with not belonging to a town because you just add to your property tax that you pay that.
That's true. That's why they're against the Crown Mountain Rec Center, right?
Yeah. You know, when Andy was editor, I think I worked on a story about that mythical Soper's County. And, you know, over the years there's been talk about this forming a new county that would maybe include the Elgibel area, the Salt, Carbondale, maybe up to Redstone, Marble, just kind of these areas that are offshoots of the counties where they now are located.
It would probably take an armed insurrection to pull that off because none of the counties want to give up their revenues.
I think the chances are next to nil.
Meanwhile, affordable housing development in Aspen. Curtis, your papers had a couple stories regarding that. We did a story, we did an interview with Adam Frisch talking about the city partnering with private entities to develop three parcels that they have that they were, when they were land banking in the mid-2000s, where they spent $30 million on land. They're starting to look at rentals, low-income rentals, category one and two, where you wouldn't make more than like $50,000, I think. Mm-hmm. And then you did a story, Chad Abraham did a story on Sunday about the elusive goal of optimal housing. And then you wrote a story about the Poppy's site at the S-curves getting affordable housing.
It's always hard to get the right perspective on this. I feel like every fall it's the housing crunch and people are moving in and trying to find places to live. And it's never been easy. There's been a lot of suggestion that perhaps it's getting harder now, and it's harder now than it has ever been for a number of reasons. I don't know 100% whether or not that's true. It's it's certainly depressing when you look through the rental listings in the paper and studios are $3,000 a month. So I think when you hear 50 units being developed by the city and 7 and 8 units here and there, I mean that sounds like good news to a lot of people.
It won't even make a dent.
I mean, you know, the other side of that argument is that you're just creating more growth. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that or not, because like you say, maybe those are people who are moving into town who were commuting before, but it's certainly on people's minds.
Right. And so in your story on Sunday,
the police chief said he had a recruit who went through the cadet school and was ready to go and just decided couldn't make it with the family, couldn't find a place to live, so they moved back to Denver. And I know that happens.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It happens all the time.
Right. You and I who, you know, have to find people and retain them, it's difficult. It's way more difficult than it used to be. And then that takes it affects the community. Like, okay, you might not get as good at cops. You might not get as good at journalists in town. Well, those are two things that really affect society. Big time.
I thought it was pretty interesting to hear the SKECO HR director say, we need to double our inventory.
They're the biggest ones. They have over 600 units.
I mean, and that will probably scare a lot of people who think that this is just going to equal more growth. And we don't even know what our carrying capacity is. We're just plowing ahead without a real good vision of where we want to go.
But, you know, there's that whole question. I mean, and this comes up a lot that, as some people say, as you were suggesting, that affordable housing is growth because it brings more people into the town. But I think really the true measure of growth, the true driver of growth, is Aspen's overall economy, the commercial economy, that if there are not more people coming to town, if there's not more development in town on the commercial side, that, you know, the affordable housing is only accommodating the people who are already going to be here to serve the people who are in those hotel rooms and those condos.
The real problem, as I see it, is the loss of affordable free market housing stock. It's these properties that were built in the 60s and the 70s that were rented out or owned by working residents. And every time one of those places flips, it sells to some LLC out of, you know, Miami for an insane amount of money, and it gets redeveloped into some luxury vacation property. So you've reduced the supply at the same time as you've just increased the demand, because these luxury properties are going to need employees.
Right.
So that to me is the real problem. You know, we're burning the candle at both ends.
Insurmountable.
And so then, like,
so that's the end of it. Should we all go home now?
So then you lose that housing unit, and you have to build more affordable housing to make up for it. You know, it gets to a point where we're in like a vicious spiral.
This is Valley Roundup, a weekly media roundtable of analysis and commentary with writers and editors. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen. We now continue our discussion with Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, about this week's headlines.
Well, there's at least two locals that have been taken out of the housing inventory because they're now in the Pitkin County Jail. Let's talk about the two drunk driving cases that happened. One happened Mid-Valley.
Well, so we had two stories in the paper the other day. One about a kid, a 21-year-old kid, who was sentenced to 400 days in jail because he was charged with drunk driving and then causing an accident that caused serious harm to a number of individuals. And after this accident, which he said was in June of 2015, he goes to the hospital, it was hours later, takes a blood test, alcohol was detected in his system hours after the case, but he, swore up and down he wasn't actually drunk, and he pleaded not guilty, actually went to trial, took this case all the way to trial, and it was a 4 or 5 day trial. And just before the fifth and final day of the trial, the defendant was in a local marijuana shop and was talking with his buddy who works there. Little did he know, the guy standing next to him is a plainclothes police detective. So this police detective overhears this guy who's a defendant who's standing trial that very moment talking about how he was wasted and how he could get away with it, but he might go to jail, like kind of like almost like bragging or joking about it, like, oh, ha, 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 I was so drunk, but I'm here in my trial. And so the police officer overhears this, goes and informs the prosecutors what he had just heard. The prosecutors were going to put him on the stand, and he's going to testify as to what he heard. So this pushed this kid into the corner. And on the last day of the trial, that had wasted all sorts of man hours, for everyone involved.
The jury,
the judge, the lawyers, all of a sudden on the last day of the trial, he changes his plea, decides to plead guilty. And so he was just sentenced, and he was sentenced to the judge really threw the book at him.
Well, the judge could have gone for six years in prison,
mm-hmm.
and he said you would be eaten alive.
Yeah.
And I don't think that would be good for you at all.
Right.
To go to the Department of Corrections.
Right.
Whether it was 6 years, I'm not sure, but it was going
years,
there.
That's true. So he's going to get about a year in the Pitkin County Jail.
Which easy time.
And then on that same day in court, a woman who had got her fifth DUI,
which is a felony,
right?
Yeah,
she got 90 days, and some people thought that was a little, if fifth DUI you only get 90 days, then this kid gets a year. And I think the 400 day sentence was more about just kind of the insult to the process and
perjury.
The system, right? And getting caught in this lie
and causing serious bodily injury
right,
and an accident.
Yeah.
I know the victim, and she struggled. She's still struggling to try to get out of that whole situation, financially and physically. So, more headlines in the news with Thompson Divide, which I don't think anybody was surprised to see that they were going to the BLM was going to cancel the 25 leases up there for oil and gas. I did not recognize, though, that at the same day that Hickenlooper and the Secretary of the Interior
and the director of the BLM,
when they made that announcement, SG Interest filed for another lease for another well pad up there. So now they have, I think, 10 days to respond to that application.
Yeah, it sounds like from John Stroud's reporting at the Glenwood Post-Independent, it sounds like, as I understand it, they want to drill on some of their existing leases. Along, I think it's called the Wolf Creek area.
Right.
Correct?
Yeah, that's right.
And they still hold a lot of leases up there, and they want to take advantage of it, apparently.
I think with the new administration and with Scott Tipton being reelected, that's probably more likely than not, unless the citizens rise up again.
And that's, you know, this is another one of those battles that never ends. You know, they say rust never sleeps and money never sleeps. And so the pressure to develop these and to extract resources and to extract money in the process never backs off. So they fight battle after battle, and they lose some, but they, you know, they appeal their losses, and then they keep filing for new permits, because that's the process. They have no incentive whatsoever to stop, and so this will continue. The pressure will continue. It just won't go away.
Yeah.
You know, Carolyn, an interesting angle to that is, as we've talked about how the area is growing and how our roads are getting more congested, et cetera, but when you think of it, and I'm not making an opinion one way or another, but SG would have to wants to use some existing roads, so you'd have traffic for the drilling and extraction using existing roads in Glenwood and Garfield County. The Forest Service wants to do a healthy forest project up in the upper frying pan. Pickens County has raised some questions saying, hey, where were the logging trucks that would be coming out of that? They want to do a somewhat of a timber clearing for healthy forest reasons up in the upper frying pan. And Pickens County is saying, would those trucks with the timber be coming down Frying Pan Road and coming through the fault? So it's going to be something that we're going to be hearing more about in 2017, of just kind of this congested roads and industrial uses increasing traffic on the already congested roads.
Once again, of course, we have all of these pressures, and the government sort of turn around and swat at everything they can, but again, the development pressures from Aspen are the ones that I think generate by far the greatest amount of traffic on all of the roads. And if the government could get that development under control, then so many of these other things would be relatively minor.
What probably will not be congested will be the ski areas this weekend. The latest update we'll have, I guess, for a Friday afternoon will be that Ajax will not be open, and there'll be a little bit of terrain open at Snowmass. So I can't imagine that there's any post-Thanksgiving skiing happening.
I mean, I think they've left the door open that maybe they'll have something open on Aspen Mountain at some point this weekend. It's probably not going to be the gondola. Remember the old Nelda Bell? Because that's as far as the snowmaking goes on Aspen Mountain, which is a whole other topic of discussion. But if the temperatures stay cold enough and we get another, you know, 4 or 5 inches of snow, then I would not close the door to skiing Aspen Mountain this weekend completely.
And then I just want to publicly acknowledge some news that happened in the media world. In Carbondale this week, the general manager of the KDNK radio station, Community Access Radio Station, is no longer with the station. The board has made a decision to move forward in a different direction. However, we don't know what it is. Despite whatever happens on a personnel level, radio is important, and community access radio, certainly for that community and in the surrounding area, is important. So keep supporting it, I suppose, is what I would say on that.
I second that.
Okay. Well, that's all the time we've got. So thank you for coming in and being on the phone, Scott, and giving us the really good synopsis of what's happening on a political and development scale there.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, there's always something interesting happening in basalt these days, that's for sure.
Right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye.
That was Scott Condon, reporter for the Aspen Times, Curtis Wackerly, editor of the Aspen Daily News, and Andy Stone, columnist for the Aspen Times. I'm Carolyn Zachariasen, and you've been listening to Valley Roundup. You can get a rundown of links and more information on the stories covered on this show on our website, aspenpublicradio.org. Valley Roundup is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.